Blog Talk Radio.
AS, this is AST Radio.
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Snatchback Podcast. You got yours truly, Arden Sports Hawk here. And of course, you got my guy, Nick Bond. What's going on, Nick?
Not a whole lot, man. Thanks for having me on again.
No problem, man. You already know you're a part of it. So, of course, it's the Snatchback. You got Arden Sports Talk here at Not Nick Bond there. Follow us on Twitter, of course. But before we get into the show, just a couple of announcements real quick. For one, there's new content from yours truly. I did a quick little recording piece on Blog Talk yesterday about Kobe's retirement. I just touched on that real quickly, so that's out on the profile. And, of course, check the YouTube channel. That's in the description below, you know, which I finally edited and uploaded the video of my experience at the 2K and Legends Classic, seeing Ben Simmons and Grayson Allen play, which is really nice. So definitely was good. So definitely check those out, man. Nick, what's up, man? What's up with you? What's on your mind after all this NBA action?
Well, you know, there's a few things. And the first one, we don't need to spend too much time on because everyone else is covering it. And it's not a huge shock to anybody anyway. But, you know, obviously Kobe Bryant announced over the weekend that he's going to be retiring after this season. And, you know, to anyone who's watched him, it's really not much news. It's been a long time coming. He's pretty terrible this season. The Lakers are terrible. Kobe just doesn't have it anymore. So it's nice to see that he finally realized he can't do it anymore. It's time to hang him up. But I think the real story that everyone needs to be focusing on, the Golden State Warriors, they're just unbeatable right now. 19-0. Had their toughest test of the season so far last night against the Utah Jazz. Won a squeaker, you know, squeaked one out in the fourth quarter at Utah. They won 1-6.
I know, Utah almost gave it to them.
Yeah, and, you know, I going into the game, I was expecting Utah to give them a pretty, you know, good test, but I wasn't expecting them to keep it that close, to be honest. I mean, Utah plays the best defense in the NBA. They're probably going to be a playoff team in the West, but you know, they really gave the Warriors some trouble. Granted, it was in Utah, but still, I mean, that was a really exciting game. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see those two teams play in the playoff series, I think.
It definitely will be. You know what? I actually had a thought popped up about the Golden State Warriors. It's getting to the point, you know, I'm asking for your opinion on it. Watching Golden State, right, I'm getting to the point where I'm very appreciative of what they're doing. But nothing surprises me anymore. It gets to the point where I watch them play and I get somewhat bored because I already know what they can do. What are your thoughts on that?
Like, you know, for example, I get what you're saying, and I have a similar feeling, and I think some people are starting to feel that way. But at the same time, it's just it's almost required viewing because, you know, they're 19-0, and it's really hard to just look at what you – I mean, when you watch them play, you're like, how are these guys going to lose? Because when they switch to that small ball lineup with Draymond, Barnes, well, now that Barnes is out, Draymond, Iggy, Rush, Clay, and Steph, you know, basically when they go to a small ball lineup, there's no stopping them because there's no lineup in the NBA that can stop them. So it's almost like watching a team use a cheat code an entire game. And
hey,
you know,
real quick, how long is Barnes out?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to be too long. I think it might be another week, maybe 2 weeks. So nothing debilitating for them.
Okay. I was wondering, too, because I saw that they was talking about the injury. But, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it's just to the point where I watch Golden State. And, it's always a great time watching Golden State. I'm trying to make it to a game when it comes to New York. But it's just like, I don't know. It's just something about them, especially Steph. They just make it look too easy. And when someone makes it look too easy, it looks really boring, you know? So last night was a little different because it was a close game. So it was like, holy crap, like, could they lose? How are they going to figure out a way to win? But it's just one of those things where, like I was saying, like last week, watching them versus Phoenix, I was not surprised that they scored 75 points and a half.
Yeah, and, you know, you kind of touched on it. Nothing they do surprises you anymore. But yet it's still like, how did they do that? But what's so amazing about the Warriors is, you know, it's an 82-game season. You know, they're about a quarter of the way through it. They're going to lose games. They're going to lose a game at some point. But even then, it's not like Golden State's going to go on a downward spiral because of that. I mean, they're going to bounce right back and probably roll off another 10 or 11 wins in a row if they lose a game. So, and but the thing is, this is absolutely a team that can get 72 wins. I mean, I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, if you start off 19-0, it's hard to imagine a team like that winning, you know, or losing 10 or 11 games over the course of the rest of the season, assuming they keep playing that pace. And with the way the Warriors are right now, it's very fair to assume they'll keep up that pace. And I think it's, you know, they're so good and even better than last season, which is scary because they were historically one of the seven or eight greatest teams ever last year. But this season, it's like, I mean, you look at them in the playoffs, it's like, who's going to beat these guys in the seven-game series? You know, people can say the West is difficult, and, you know, sure, the West is
not
tough,
this year.
But the Warriors are in a class of their own. I mean, I look at them, mm-hmm. and I don't see a single team in the West right now. And, again, it's early, but still right now, I really don't see a team in the West that can beat them in seven games, except maybe the Spurs because the styles of players are similar, and Greg Popovich is still the best coach in the league. But and the Warriors are literally in a class of their own. I mean, there's the Warriors and everybody else in the NBA right now, and we're seeing the makings of a dynasty.
Honestly, I think the West is about to look the weakest it's been in years because nobody in the West right now is standing out. I mean, even San Antonio at 14-4, because I'm looking at the standings right now. You got OKC 11-7. You got three teams that are 10-8. Then you got Utah and Phoenix. They're 8-8 and 8-9 respectively. But one player I want to touch on real quick, I hope you've been paying attention to him because he's Muttsy TV. And, hey, man. I hope you've been paying attention to the kid Paul George. I hope you've been watching him.
Oh, yeah.
I hope you've been
Paul
watching
George
him.
Been excellent this season.
I hope you've been watching my guys. So far in November, averaging 29-8-4, shooting 47% from the field, 49% from three. And, hey, I'll tell you this, man. For those out there that are already doing their early MVP ranking, if Paul George is in your top three or whatever, I can't blame you. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Paul George is absolutely looking like an MVP candidate right now. You know, he's still technically coming back from that leg injury because he only played like six games last year and barely played, you know, in those games. So this is really the comeback season for him. And it's impressive to see because not only is he just looking like his normal self before the injury, he's playing the best basketball of his career so far. Now, a couple years ago in the 13-14 season when he really, like, broke out, he did start off playing pretty hot, but then he kind of cooled off down the stretch. So I'm not skeptical necessarily about Paul George. I mean, we already know the guy's a great player, top 10, top 12 player. But I just want to see if he can keep up these shooting percentages over the course of the season. Playing like an MVP candidate for sure.
I'm also very happy about the fact that the Eastern Conference is looking competitive. I mean, you look throughout the East, the top eight standings, heck, even forget the top eight, the top 10 standings, everybody's at least 500. Well, technically not the Knicks, they're 8-10, but everybody else is 500 or above, man. Your Celtics.
Yes.
The eighth spot, 10-8. Hey, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
How are they looking, by the way, man? I need a scouting report on the Celtics. What's good with them? I don't really think I've watched them in depth so far this season. How are they looking this year?
They're inconsistent. And, you know, a lot of people, very smart people who I respect, you know, a lot of writers were saying that this is a 50-win team. You know, they might be the
what?
New Hawks. And I thought that was a little crazy because, you know, we have, you know, Brad Stevens is one of the best coaches in the NBA. I would argue that he's the best in-game coach in the NBA because he makes excellent adjustments and has a really good feel for the game and has good rotation. But he's not a miracle worker. So this roster, I still am not a big fan of this roster. There's too many players on this roster. There's too many guys who need minutes. But we do play incredible defense. I mean, our defense is really, really good. It's one of the best defenses in the NBA. But it's just, there seems to be no identity on offense yet, and it, you know, goes back to what I was just saying. there's just too many players on this team. There's too many guys who need minutes. So, you know, and I've been saying this, you know, we need to trade badly. I mean, we need to get, you know, somebody that's better than some of the guys we have. I mean, I love Avery Bradley, and he should maybe be an all-star with the way he's been playing. But, yeah, the Celtics are good, but they're about what I thought they'd be, probably a 42, 43-win team, but not a 50, 55-win team like some people thought.
Avery Bradley's out here averaging 16 points a game. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and watching him play, it's his shooting off the dribble's gotten better. He's shooting. He's gotten better on offense every year. You know, to anyone, you know, I think anyone that's watched him can attest to that. You know, he's a hardworking guy. He's slowly improved on offense every year. We already knew he was a great defender. He's one of the league's very best defenders, and he's a big reason why our defense is elite in the NBA. So I'm a big fan of Avery Bradley.
And I can see what you're talking about in terms of playing too many guys, because I'm seeing, I didn't count, but I'm looking at right now at least 10 guys who's averaging over 10 minutes a game. Literally. Like, I haven't counted it yet, but I see even going down to the bottom, R.J. Hunter, 10 minutes a game. David Lee, 15. Olenek, 17. I still hate you, Kelly Olenek, for what you did to Kevin Love. Amir Johnson, 23. Crowder, Bradley Thomas, they're averaging 30. That's crazy. You guys got nobody that's averaging 35, so that definitely tells you he wants to use the bench. But at the same time, though, if you're trying to trade some pieces, then who are you trading for? Because with the type of team that you guys got, with the pieces that you guys have, you got to trade for somebody that's big time. You got to trade for star.
And
so
and
who
Danny
would you want to trade for?
Danny Ainge has said, you know, basically in interviews that it's all about having the assets, you know, for when the time comes. And they're basically just waiting for that guy, whoever it is. No one knows, at least in the public. Danny Ainge might have some ideas, you know, behind closed doors. But basically it's, when can a James Harden trade pop up? You know, that's what the Rockets did. They stacked up assets for when the time, and they had a fairly competitive team ready to accompany, you know, a potential star that they could trade for. And that's what they did. And that's what the hope is.
I know who you guys should trade for.
All these draft picks and, you know, some players we can move, just hoping, waiting for the right guy to come along that we can trade for.
And all honesty, I know who you guys should trade for.
Who do you have in mind?
You guys got to. Boogie Cousins.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's,
Boogie.
Yeah, that's been a highly,
I know they've been linked. I know you guys have been linked with Boogie, but in all seriousness, though, that gotta happen. Because for one, Boogie's gonna kill somebody in Sacramento at one point. I think that's definitely gonna be the case. And two, you guys have enough pieces to get it done. I mean, I could see 3 to 4 players being sent with a draft pick for DeMarcus. Like, you guys can make that work.
Oh, it would be more draft picks than players, probably, because the Kings have had to give up draft picks recently in other trades. They can end up losing a draft pick to the Bulls, and they gave up a first to Philly to get rid of Nick Stauskas. So Philly's gonna, or Sacramento's gonna want first round picks. We'll definitely be giving them, theoretically, it would be something like the Nets pick in 2016, probably another Nets pick, probably like the 2018 Nets pick as well. And one, maybe two other picks and, you know, a couple players.
What about players, though? Because, but like, what players in particular? Because Boogie's a center. Would you throw in Sellinger?
Well, it's
Sellinger
about,
and Olenek, perhaps? Because you already got
Amari
Johnson there.
It's more about figuring out how the salaries match up, and I don't have all that in front of me, and that's a lot to figure out. So I would have to sit down and mess around with the trade machine to figure out how the salaries would match up, because we can't just send Sullinger and Olenek if, you know, the money doesn't work. So, but Sullinger could be dealt, maybe. He's been playing really well this season, so he would be a nice trade asset if that's the route they wanted to go. But, yeah, I mean, I think we
have... Yeah, that's definitely a tough one.
We have the tools, I think, to trade for Boogie. And I think we're a good environment for him. Brad Stevens is a coach that, you know, wouldn't throw him under the bus. Brad Stevens is the kind of coach that wants to have a good player-coach relationship, and he tries to get the best out of players and figures out how to use their abilities, whereas George Karl's never been interested in that. He's always been interested in driving away his superstars for whatever reason. But, you know,
sorry, my bad. What were you saying?
No, you're good. The worst thing that happened to Boogie was last year, around this time, actually, when he was sick and missing games, and then the Kings stumbled to, like, 11 and 12 or something like that, they fired Mike Malone, who was A, a really good young coach. He's doing a good job with the Nuggets this year. And B, that was a guy who, you know, listened to Boogie, related to Boogie, understood Boogie, and got the most out of him on the court. And so a coach like that, you know, Brad Stevens, you know, that'd be perfect for Boogie. And I think Boogie would eventually welcome a trade to Boston, because Boston isn't a big, sexy free agent destination. But to me, it's the kind of place where once a guy does get there via trade, they seem to love it there and don't, you know, they don't want to leave. So hopefully the same effect would happen to Boogie if we were to get him. But, you know, I'm not going to assume we get him because, it's, you know, that sounds too good to be true.
Yeah, but yeah, I actually just used the trade machine right now. And in terms of the salaries, I was able to do David Lee and I think Olynyk. Those two salaries were able to match it with Cousins.
Because Lee would be an expiring, I think, for them. So, yeah, that something like that would probably work. I'm sure the Kings would take that on, plus a few draft picks. That could work.
Yeah, and another thing, too, I want to touch on with you is I saw you talking about it yesterday for a little bit, and I also saw you retweeting it. But in general, I saw my timeline talking about it. I found it hilarious was everybody was feeling some type of way about what Kevin Durant said about the media and Kobe. And basically, for those that didn't know, Durant basically said to the media, you guys are basically treating Kobe like ish. You know, he's a legend, blah, blah, blah. And I saw on your timeline, you felt some type of way along with others. What was it necessarily about Durant's comment that rubbed you, it appears, the wrong way? Because it really sparked a discussion. Like, it was a discussion that took place on my timeline for at least a few hours about media members maybe or maybe not knowing about the game of basketball and players and how they have to handle the media and vice versa. How did you feel about it before I give you my take?
Well, there's a few things. Kevin Durant, he just sounds whiny. The media is basically babying him and giving him free passes his entire career, so I don't know why he's so angsty. And, you know, I think maybe he's trying to put on a show, maybe be a character, like, oh, I'm not the nice guy you think I am. I think it might
be. But hold on, real quick, though. But is the media really babying Kevin Durant, though? Because, I mean, what was there about Kevin Durant to really baby in the first place?
I mean, they're never tough on him like they have been guys like LeBron or something like that. Look, I'm not for media being tough on anybody just because they don't win. But if the standard is there, I think you need to hold everybody accountable. And Kevin Durant does seem to get a free pass in the media for, you know, a lot of the childish things he's said and done, you know, on Twitter or whatnot. As for Kobe, I don't think the media has ever treated him unfairly. I mean, the guy is playing horrible. I mean, maybe they shouldn't talk about him, period, but if you're going to talk about his play this year, he's been absolutely terrible. And in the past, Kobe would have narratives written for him every single time. Kobe could shoot 5-25 in his prime, which gets plenty of his games. And the media would be ready to go, well, he's a warrior. He wants it more, part of a champion, all the cliche stuff that just is wrong and doesn't need to be said. The media had that stuff ready to go for Kobe at the drop of the hat. And they had the Jordan comparisons, which, you know, are still not even close for Kobe his entire career. So I don't think the media ever treated him unfairly. I think it's just another way for people to spin it around and make Kobe seem like some sympathetic figure, which he's not right now. It is sad to watch him play like this, but it's just KB's a Kobe stan, and that's basically all it is. That's really all it boils down to.
You know what it is? I think it comes down to, and I said it yesterday when I was talking about Kobe towards the end of the show, and I think it basically comes down to this. People just have to understand how to balance criticism and appreciation. And I think the biggest problem is right now, because of social media and because of these things that take place, a lot of it is the fact that people don't know how to do both. Like, and this is coming from somebody, let's say with Kobe, I've been one of Kobe's biggest critics for over the years. I've been extremely harsh on Kobe a ton of times. But yet, I know how to do both. I just think what's going on here, because I agree with what you're saying, because there was a ton of narratives made for Kobe, but I also could see where Durant's saying, because there's some parts of the media and there's some fans who are just keeping it 100 when it comes to Kobe, talking strictly about Kobe, but the problem is you have those people that could talk about Kobe, but they're not keeping it professional. They're not trying to keep it respectful, and they have to go the extra mile with, like Durant saying, treating him like crap or saying these other things or do things like Deadspin with their article about Kobe's retirement and how far off and rude there was about it. So I can see where Durant's coming from, but I just think it comes down to it's not hard just to do both. You can criticize somebody and at the same time appreciate them without having to do one or the other. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think, too, we got to start switching it up when it comes to stan and fans. Like, not all fans are stans and vice versa. But to me, I just think those are my two cents on it. But I also think the same way that pros are held to another level when it comes to dealing with the media, I think the media really needs to be held responsible for what they're saying about athletes. Because the only time it seems to be held responsible is if it's something extremely offensive or whatever. A lot of these guys never stepped between those white lines. You dig what I'm saying? None of them have that experience, and a lot of them just love to talk and talk and talk and be rude and suffer no consequences for it. So I just think there needs to be changes all around, but my main point is this. You could criticize and appreciate, but also just try to do it objectively with no agendas, because it definitely seems Kobe's one of those guys who brings out the worst in people.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I agree with basically all of your points. And the thing is, you know, I think KD just doesn't like the fact that, you know, if people want to talk about Kobe this season, you know, just this season, he's been downright terrible. Kobe is probably the worst heavy minutes starter in the NBA right now. I mean, he's shooting, like, in the 20s overall, like, 30% for three. Kobe is just really, really bad, and the Lakers are really, really bad. I mean, if people are going to talk about his play, that's what it is. It's really bad. So, and it's the media's job to talk about that. So, to me,
but that's the thing,
I take that as maybe they shouldn't talk about Kobe as much. Like, let's just talk about, you know, Kobe's career winding down and appreciate how good he used to be. Let's just not talk about how downright putrid he is right now. Instead, why don't we, you know, maybe focus on guys like Tim Duncan or Dirk Nowitzki who are still going strong at their age. We get it. Kobe's old. Kobe's really bad. So if people don't like that the media has to talk about that, then the media maybe should just focus on Kobe's retirement instead of his current awful play on the court.
Honestly, I just think before we move on from it, I just think what it comes down to is people can talk about Kobe's play all they want, but they have to keep it in perspective and just focus solely on the play. I think I could see where Durant's coming from, and it's also been a big pet peeve of mine, which is a legend like Kobe or even with Peyton, they struggling, they're older. And instead of keeping it in perspective of focusing only on this season right now, people suddenly look at them and suddenly start thinking, maybe I should move them down here and there in terms of my list of where I think they are as a person or as an athlete or this and that. So I can see where he's coming from. But I just think at the end of the day, it's really easy just to be objective and cover Kobe's play without some of these tweets and articles that come out. Like, we could do with less washed or less hanging up tweets. Just focus on the play. But one thing I wanted to touch on with you was some college basketball. Because like I said at the beginning of the show, I was at the 2K Legends Classic. I was able to see Duke, LSU, and when it comes to players, I was able to see Ben Simmons, Antonio Blakeney, Grayson Allen, Henry Ellison. And let me tell you something about Ben Simmons, man. I was extremely impressed watching Ben Simmons play. The kid, to me, I think is the only young player I've seen that's truly worthy of a LeBron comparison. Because of the fact that he, like LeBron, is the most talented dude on the court who necessarily isn't the most aggressive and loves to play with their teammates and can fill up the stat sheet even if they're not scoring. I was very impressed. And I was at the game, by the way, where Ben Simmons had 21, 20, and 7. And Grayson Allen, by the way, big-time player. He might be only a big-time college player, but the kid is big-time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big college basketball guy. It's just not.
I'm not either.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't really keep up with it that much anymore. What I tend to do is if I am watching it, I really only watch it just to pay attention to any top recruits. So basically a Kentucky game I'll watch if it's on national TV. I like Ben Simmons. I wouldn't mind him on the Celtics if we end up keeping the Nets pick for 2016. Grayson Allen has had some big moments for Duke.
Yeah, man, he's a really good player, man. There's something about him which is, I know people, you know, the thing of college play, especially the white ones, and they think, man, can they make that transition to the league or he's just going to turn into another shooter? But the kid could really do stuff on the ball, off the ball, really crafty and somewhat athletic. So it was just a great experience being there. Now, one more thing I wanted to touch on, which is I was talking to a dude on Twitter who goes by the name of Legends Court, where he just talks about the legends of basketball all the time. Shout out to him. And I'm going to throw this question out to you. Is LeBron James becoming, whether it's right now or in general, underrated as a defender? Because in all honesty, I think he is. I think social media is starting to underrate LeBron as a defender because of the fact that you look at a defensive rating here and there, or because of the fact there's a few clips of him being lazy. Because I still haven't seen a ton of people drop 20 or 30 on him, so social media like to declare LeBron a below-average defender now.
Well, here's the deal with LeBron. He was getting lazy on that end his last year in Miami and for most of his first year in Cleveland. I think underrated, maybe to the general public that don't watch basketball, sure. But, you know, as far as people that, you know, actually know what they're talking about and watch the game, yeah, well, I think people know that LeBron is still a pretty good defender. He's declined on that end for sure. But looking at
But you sure about that, though?
Yeah.
Because we say he's declining. We say he's declining or not forget declining. We say, oh, he's not what he used to be, but yet I don't see cats on a nightly basis getting 20 to 30 on him. I just see people's argument being a few vines here and there where he looks lazy. I don't see him getting crossed up. I don't see him getting abused down there. It's just a clip of him being lazy and it's, oh, bad defender.
Well,
he's
declining
not what
doesn't
to be.
Mean becoming bad or getting abused. It just simply means not being as good as you were at your peak. And so LeBron is still a good defender. You know, he's still, you know, 10 points better defensively when he's on the court. So LeBron is still a good defender. He can't carry a load defensively like he used to. A, because he has responsibility on offense. B, because he's getting older. And C, just because guys decline. So LeBron is still a good defender and still probably the best player in the NBA. But, you know, I think people who don't watch basketball or watch him as much as they should, yeah, maybe he's underrated in that regard. But I think people who watch basketball, you know, and watch the Cavs know that LeBron is still a pretty good defender overall.
I just had to make sure, man, because social media, I don't know, last couple years, they've really been trying to get on LeBron for defense. And I'm like, your guy's only case is a few clips of him being lazy. I'm like, give me some names of guys who get 20 to 30 on LeBron every night, because you guys are showing me clips of guys scoring on LeBron, but yet whenever LeBron's guarding them, you know, LeBron is holding them to 4 to 6 points, whoever he's responsible for guarding. But other than that, man, that's today's episode of the Snatchback Podcast. Thanks for listening. You got yourself here, yours truly, Artist Sports Talk. You got at Nick Bond there. Nick, shout out to you, man, for coming on the show once again. Nick, let them know where they can follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, y'all can follow me at NotNickBon, NotNickBaughan. Arthur, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. We'll be doing this again next time. Nick, before we go, let people know what game or games that they should be looking forward to next.
Let me pull up the schedule real quick. I just had it up. Let's see. There's going to be a lot of games tonight, Tuesday. All right. Computer froze. Lakers-Philly. I mean, everyone should be interested in that game, let's be honest. I think Philly will win that game. I am all in on the Sixers. I love watching them. Magic-Wolves, I think, is an interesting matchup. And I guess the late game on NBA TV should be interesting. Mavs-Blazers at 10 p.m. Should be a good offensive shootout. Other than that, no really interesting matchups tonight. But those are the three I've got, you know, on my radar.
Nice. All right, folks, that's the Snatchback Podcast. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.